Hello, Potters. Episode 47 of CosPod. How you guys doing? We're tired, so we're going to be a little loopy. I'm Val.
And I am Amber, and
loopy.
Well, I'm trying to get it so that like it's just above the top of my head so that I'm not weirdly out of proportion.
Thank you, because it makes my job so much easier when I have to edit.
Well, you know, given my body proportions, I really don't need any more help being out of proportion.
It's appropriate headroom. So
yes.
Many thanks.
Yes. Notwithstanding my ego size sometimes. Anyways, loopy is a normal state of mind for me, so this is going to be a normal episode as far as that goes. I actually just got back from working out about a half hour ago, and then I promptly shoved food in my face. So I'm kind of food coma-ish now. But it's okay, because our health program at work is over. It was over yesterday.
Thank goodness. And you know they're going to have another one at the beginning of next year, so.
Well, they'll probably do it again next year. And it was really odd because my body fat percentage went up, but my blood sugar went down. So I kind of exchanged one for the other, which was incredibly strange since it wasn't like, you know, I ate butter daily. In fact, I think I had butter twice in the last 3 months.
Butter.
And I didn't have bread at all for the last 3 months, which was also very weird. But I have a feeling it was because I ate a bunch of pasta.
Yeah, you kind of threw and you took out one thing, put in something different. Yeah, and pasta has a lot of carbs.
Well, unfortunately, it's one of those things where when you're in school at night and you work during the day, you basically come home and flop and go, I really don't feel like cooking anything. So I just throw water on the stove and anything I can cook in water. That was my food. So it was a lot of pasta and rice and beans and things like that. A lot of vegetarian food and microwavable food, too.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, this is what I get when they pile on more responsibilities while I'm working full-time and in school. And a symphony musician, because I just had my first concert this past weekend, too.
Exactly. So it's understandable. I do the same thing, too.
So I celebrated yesterday, since I felt so guilty about my body fat. I didn't have on the border, which is what I had planned on doing. I had macaroni and cheese instead as a kind of compromise between the two. So, oh, it was delicious. Oh, it was so good.
I hate you.
After having skimped for the last 3 months on basically anything I could eat, yeah, I kind of needed a break. And I have gained a few pounds over the last couple of days, probably from, you know, binge eating from all the stuff that I can now have and not have to write down on a piece of paper that I ate it. But anyways, this is only mildly cosplay related since I have perpetually been dealing with weight problems, you know, as I've been a cosplayer forever, which I need to get back to updating my blog again. But school got in the way. And it will be again because I actually have my final exam next week. And I have my final project due on Monday.
Mm-hmm. School life. Yeah.
I wanted to make a scabbard for my Arwen sword for when we go to TRF so that I can carry it. You cannot have unsheathed weapons in the fairgrounds. And they have to be piece tied. So you have to have a scabbard that has a way to piece tie it, you know, so you can't draw it. Well, Arwen's sword doesn't have a sheath. Nobody sells a sheath to go with the sword, which is kind of backwards. It's like, why would you have a prop that does not have a storage container?
She doesn't need
especially
one.
Especially a
just
bladed
too cool.
One. Well, there are people who will custom make it for you for $400, which is 4 times what I paid for the sword. It's like, no, I can make a scabbard. I just need time to sit down and do it, which is what I was hoping to do this weekend. It's like, no, I have a final project due Monday. I really need to sit down and just get cracking. So, sadly, another dud as far as cosplay goes. Which is very sad because I wanted to do a photo shoot this year with it too.
Because it's a very pretty, pretty dress. It's very pretty.
It is.
It needs some attention.
When we go to TRF next weekend, our entire group is going in Hobbit and Lord of the Rings costumes.
Well, of course.
So we'll have a themed group. Well, I mean, you say of course, but there's also a Disney Princesses group going. There is a My Little Pony group going that I know of.
Well, I know who you're going with, so I'm not surprised by this.
You know, the myriad Native Americans, Stormtroopers, Link from Legend of Zelda. I mean, there's always random people that go to Renaissance festivals.
That's part of the fun.
That aren't really Renaissance. Or, I think steampunk is the next big thing now at Renaissance festivals, and belly dance and fusion is coming back too. Huh?
Steampunk goes anywhere.
It does, but because it has that Victorian background, it's particularly suited for Renaissance festivals, even though it's not quite the same era.
Totally not quite the same, but kind of fits in.
Not that they care, because, you know, stormtroopers are a few centuries in the future from the Renaissance.
Not if you do a steampunk stormtrooper.
That is true. I have not yet seen one at fair yet, though.
It'll
Who
happen.
Knows? You know, maybe we'll see it this year. I would much appreciate a steampunk stormtrooper over the distinct lack of clothing that sometimes shows up at TRF2. Which is not a costume. Not having clothing is not a costume. Just saying. Birthday suit does not count as cosplay.
Con laws.
Actually, I have the distinct impression that they have a little more leeway down there because there is, okay, family safe show, parents cover your kids' ears, you know, cover your microphones at work. There is partial nudity at TRF around the bonfire at night, and the cops watch. So it's not like they enforce the whole public indecency thing. They let it happen and they seem to enjoy it themselves, let's put it that way. So, you know, if it happens, just because it's against the law doesn't necessarily mean the law is enforced.
Right.
It's
half arse con law.
It's against campground rules to store flammable objects in your camping area. However, it's really difficult to light a campfire stove without a flammable substance like propane. Or lamp fuel for spinning fire. Or lighting a lamp. So, you get something. Logic. Need it.
You're trying too hard. There's not supposed to be logic in anything. The world makes more sense when you don't have logic included.
Well, I kind of like the world to make a little bit of sense. It's the engineer in me. Everything has to have a little bit of structure to it, at least.
This is a woman
Otherwise,
who's
it just
not
kind
corrupted
of all
by
collapses.
Corporate America. That's the plain truth. There you go.
Anyways.
Do we want to get on with our segment?
Yes. Yes, we do. I can talk about fair all night, so we'd best move on so I don't.
Got it. Cool. So what we decided to do this time, to kind of take it a little easy, since we're both busy, we're both tired, we're both probably at the point of passing out, except I have my coffee. Yay. We decided to do a Q&A session, but instead of asking people directly for questions and whatnot, I decided to scour a bunch of cosplay forums, such as cosplay.com, some of the DeviantArt groups, and just to look at common questions that are asked almost perpetually, almost all the time, and seem to have a myriad of answers. And I think this is also a chance for Amber and I to kind of go over some basics of, you know, how do you look up cosplay stuff, what's the best way to word questions, stuff like that. So, even though we are not experts on everything, I think based off all the questions that we have that I put up in our chat room, we could totally answer all of these and be geniuses. Sound good to you, Amber?
I can BS my way to anything, man.
Hell
Let's
yeah.
Do this.
That's what college taught us.
No, that's what middle school taught me.
Oh,
it's only
true?
It's just gotten worse since
it's
then.
It's just gotten worse as we've gotten older.
College is when you put it to use, you know, writing essays.
Oh, I miss those days. I love the essays.
Anyways, question the first. How do you make boot covers? Well, there's a few different ways you can actually make boot covers. It depends on if you have stretchy fabric, which is probably the easiest way.
Definitely.
Or if you have the not so stretchy fabric, which is harder to fit. Because unfortunately, shoes are curved normally, unless you're doing like Minecraft cosplay, in which case you have really easy boot covers. But as long as your shoes have curves, you're going to have darts in your fabric to make it conform to the curved surface, and that's where the hard part comes in, is darts are just not easy things to do in general, to do them well. And if you're a beginner at sewing, a dart is basically just cutting out a section of fabric, usually a triangle. Occasionally you'll see them as hourglass shapes or even diamond shapes, kind of like that. And basically it just takes out a piece of the clothing or the fabric so that when you pull the edges together, when you stitch them together, they have a more curved surface so that it will fit around round shapes. This is why women's clothing has a lot of darts. Men's clothing does not, because women are full of round shapes.
That's a nice way of putting it.
I rather thought so myself.
I think most people tend to follow this kind of same pattern, because I've seen so many different tutorials on it, but it basically boils down to the same thing. You take your boot, you put it on, you put your fabric on top of it, you pin it as close to the boot as possible, cut it out, stitch it all together, slip it on. I mean, that's in basic the essence of it. It's just a matter of, are you using stretchy fabric? Do you want to be permanently attached to your shoe, or do you want to have removable? Are you going to be adding in any zippers? Are you going to be adding in any buckles? It's just little details that make it different from one another.
Right, and this is, again, why stretchy fabric tends to work a little easier for this, because you can just stretch the fabric to shape. In fact, you want to stretch the fabric as you're fitting it around the shoe. You don't want it loose. You actually want it to be a little bit on the tight side.
So that way you don't have to worry about it falling down or rolling over or anything like that.
Right.
And for those who are worried about it, there's this wonderful thing called top stick, a.k.a. fashion tape. It's used for toupees and helping keeping a wig on top of your head. It works out fantastically if you have any problems with your boot covers or leggings or whatever. Just stick it on your leg and it won't fall off. It's fantastic.
Alternatively, Butterick actually has a set of patterns for boot covers, and a lot of the costume patterns that are going around this time of year, some of them do have boot covers. Some of them will have something called spats, which aren't quite boot covers, but they can be used in a similar fashion. I mean, heck, you can even go after Halloween to some of the costume stores and purchase a real cheap costume that has boot covers, take them apart, and use them as pattern pieces. I mean, that's a real cheap way of doing it. If you need to make boot covers that go to the thigh or above the knee, you can use the stretchy fabric method. Just don't stick yourself with the pins.
Been there, done that.
If you don't want to wear the shoe, incidentally, while you are pinning the fabric, you can stuff it with newspaper to simulate your leg in it, or you can just stuff it with stuffing or something similar. You can just drape patterns around your leg as well. If you don't have stretchy fabric, you'll just end up having to do a lot more cutting,
mm-hmm.
and a lot more, you know, sketching, which is actually how I made my Umi boot covers, is I draped non-stretchy muslin around my leg and just kind of traced the shape of my leg out on it, gave myself a little bit of extra room just in case,
mm-hmm.
and then just had to keep cutting off little slivers until I was happy with the shape. Incidentally, they do fall down. If you have thigh-high boot covers, you will either need to use fashion tape to make sure they don't fall down, or you can have straps and clips to hold them on, similar to garter belts. Or you can make them really tight, which I don't recommend doing because you can actually cut off your circulation.
It's not very comfortable.
Or healthy.
Or super healthy.
You're not a very impressive cosplayer if you have fainted on the ground in your costume. We don't want that, so...
No, please don't.
Yeah, you'll probably want to use the belts and clips or the fashion tape as your methods of choice. Incidentally, I did want to mention that God Save the Queen Fashions, if you go to her website, she has a lot of boot cover tutorials that are really good, both stretch and non-stretch, and she has tutorials for adding on when they have contrast bands at the top, like Sailor Moon style. She's got tutorials for those, too. So I
also made one for one of our episodes, like way, 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 way back in the beginning. So it's on one of our episodes.
Yes, if you go on our newly redesigned podcast page that I redesigned, you can find all of our episodes now embedded with descriptions, so you should be able to find that more easily now.
Hopefully so, because I have no idea. It's like episode 8, 10, 12.
This is why I put descriptions, so you can just, you know, Control F or Apple F, Command F, and just find boot covers. So if it's somewhere on the page, you will find that tutorial. So that is boot covers.
Yay. Okay. So question the second and the third. We're kind of combining these because they're both kind of the same idea.
Well, the first question is a yes or no.
Yeah. Question the second. Can you dye a wig? Yes.
Yes.
You can't dye a dark wig. That's a dumb idea. If you can't go from dark to light. You can go from light to dark. Just
right,
like dyeing with anything else.
You're basically adding color. No matter what you do, no matter what method you use, you are always adding color, which means you can't go lighter because you can't add white. White is taking away color.
Exactly. So then question the third is, how do you dye a wig? And the most common method I think most of us use is the Sharpie method, which is a lot of Sharpie markers and some alcohol and fun times.
And a mask so you don't breathe in the fumes for hours.
Oh my gosh. Sounds horrible. And gloves. Gloves are very important to have because you will stain your hands. Sharpie hands are not fun.
Granted, the easy-peasy way of dyeing a wig, which is usually only done for highlights, incidentally, because it takes so long, is actually just taking a Sharpie marker and literally coloring strand by strand your wig, in which case you'll want gloves because you're going to put your hand under the fibers and just run the marker over the fibers just like you would, you know, a coloring book. And you do it over and over again, strand by strand. Takes forever. But that is the easiest way of coloring a wig that doesn't require any other supplies besides Sharpie and gloves. Incidentally, it's also the easiest way to get high because the marker's not diluted.
Oh my goodness.
The second way is the one that almost everybody uses when you need to dye a whole wig, which is alcohol, you know, rubbing alcohol. And the ink cartridge of the Sharpie marker. You don't need the Sharpie marker the outside. You don't need the whole thing. I have a prop. Which I'm not going to open this because I don't want to sniff the fumes forever. But if you open up a Sharpie marker, on the inside is a little cylinder with a bunch of ink in it. I highly recommend wearing gloves for this unless you wish to stain your fingers the color of the Sharpie. But you'll find a little cylinder of ink inside, and you can pour the alcohol in a squirt bottle. You probably want it maybe half, maybe three quarters full. And then you take the ink cartridge and you just plop it right in there, and it will start to dye the alcohol. And you squirt your wig. And it will take time.
Mm-hmm. It always takes
and
time.
It will take multiple coats, too. I mean, you can't just go once and that's it. Unless you're trying to do a very light kind of gradient. If you want brilliant color, it's probably going to take you several Sharpie marker cartridges and several coats.
I say the only other way that I know of, and I haven't personally tried this, but I've heard a few people who like this method better, is you can use acrylic paint. You just basically take acrylic paint, lukewarm water, and you dilute the paint to almost like a latex consistency, so it's got to be a little bit runny, not so thick and gloppy, and shove it in there, let it sit, pull it out, do that about two or three more times, and it'll eventually stick to the wig. My whole thing is that I would imagine that even though you dilute the acrylic paint, it's probably still going to be a little stiff. It's not going to be as shiny.
If
That's
you
the one thing I
diluted
like about
it.
the Sharpie method is that at least it retains some of its shine and sheen.
Well, if you dilute it enough, it's almost watercolor style. You're almost watercolor painting your wig. The only problem is that acrylics are water soluble.
Yeah,
So if your
exactly.
wig ever gets wet, or if you need to wash it because you should wash your
Wash your
wigs,
wig.
you risk having the color run out.
That seems
Which is
kind of.
why the al when you use the alcohol method, the alcohol actually helps to strip the shaft of the plastic to make it so that the color will stick. Because wigs, I mean, if you're using a human hair wig, you can actually use hair dye. You can use
Yeah, a normal
regular
hair dye,
hair
like,
color,
exactly.
like Pantene or whatever people use now. If you're using a standard cosplay wig, they're made out of plastic. No matter what fiber it says it's made of, if it says it's made of Kanikalon or any sort of synthetic, it's plastic. They're all plastics. So you can't use standard human hair dye. It just won't stick. You have to use something that will get the dye to stick to the plastic, which is alcohol. Not drinking alcohol, incidentally.
It's
Don't
okay.
dunk your wig in vodka.
Allie just pointed this out. Two things. It's 70% rubbing proof alcohol, and then you need a probably best to do it outside where there's a breeze and you
Where it's
can
well
breathe.
ventilated, yes.
Thank you, Allie. Totally forgot about that.
Yes, please ventilate when you're doing this, even if you're wearing a mask. Yes, please do. All right. Oh, there it goes. I'm trying to watch the comments as this is going.
Ah, gotcha.
And it's taking a second because, of course, everything that pops up on YouTube right now is of football.
Football! Look at
Why?
Texas OU game this weekend.
Why
Holy
is there
cow.
football? In terms of alcohol, incidentally, I think 70% is the most you can get over the counter. Anything stronger than that, you actually have to get specialty because they don't want us normal people having that kind of alcohol strength.
How dare they? We're just using it for crafting. That's normal.
All right. Next question. What fabric should I use for X cosplay? Insert your character of choice for X. There's been a lot of people asking about Legend of Korra since it just started again, and Attack of Titan, which is now apparently the, football of the anime world. It's massively popular, and everybody has to sit down and watch it whenever it's on.
I still don't understand what it's about. I just know that there are these kids and that there's these giant things that look like muscle stuff. I don't know. I don't get it. I haven't watched
Apparently,
it.
there's machinery and robots involved, and of course, robots make everything better.
Oh yeah, okay. Do their eyes like light up and have lasers?
I would not know. I have never watched the series. I don't even have time to regularly watch the series that I want to watch. But at any rate, this is a cosplay podcast. We will talk cosplay. The fabric that you use is going to depend on a few things. First of which is your budget, because no matter how much you really, really want that silk for that costume, if you can't afford it, you can't have it. So, frankly, the amount of money you have really kind of limits what you can buy, which is why we recommend that you get them on sale. Most fabric stores cycle about every 6 weeks through their sales. So, if you miss one, just wait about a month, the sale will happen again. Winter fabrics tend to go on sale in the summer. Summer fabrics tend to go on sale in the winter. So you can always watch your seasonal sales as well. And the chain fabric stores like Hancock, Joann's, Hobby Lobby tend to have their own coupons. So you can always watch out for the coupons to also help you save a significant percentage off of your fabric. So not only budget, but plan for your fabric purchase. Know about how much you intend to spend. And then just watch for the fabric to hit that price. You can also look on things like eBay, but it's a little more iffy. It really depends on how badly you really need to be able to touch and feel the fabric before you buy it. That's the downside to eBay, is you basically have to trust the seller that the fabric is what you think it is. At least if you go into a store, you can touch the fabric, you can stretch it, you can, you know, you can play around with it and see how it drapes to see if it's what you want. It's really hard to return fabric on eBay.
It's hard to return fabric in general.
Yes. So there is that. Do make sure that if you are allergic to certain fabrics, wool is a big one. Don't use it. Kindly don't use things that you're allergic to. But some fabrics, when you look at screenshots, are really easy to tell what kind of fabric they might be using. Like, for example, Cora, you can tell that some of her items are edged in fur. That's really easy to tell. As far as things that you can't really easily tell, you will probably need to judge by how the fabric moves in the series. Each fabric has its own particular qualities. Cottons move a certain way, stretch a certain way, they drape on the human body a certain way, knits drape a certain way, silks and satins drape a certain way, and have a certain sheen to them when light shines on them. Leather has a particular grain to it in a series. You can tell if somebody is wearing leather. So you kind of have to look for hints. When you look at reference shots, which are very important, incidentally, when trying to figure out a cosplay, look at your reference shots and see if you can pick up hints. I mean, even the creators of the series may not necessarily know what kind of fabric the character is wearing. They may not care. They may just only care what color it is.
I was about to say, one of the things that I like to do is when I'm looking at a character, I like to think about the environment they're in, and it kind of better determines what fabrics I should use. Like Legend of, like Korra in particular, you're not going to use satins, you're not going to be using silks.
If you're Fire Nation, you will.
Yeah, Fire Nation, you will. But I mean, you could probably be using like linens or cottons or things that are comfortable and warm based on what her environment is. So that can also attribute to your fabric choices.
Lastly, think about where you're going to be wearing this. If you're going to be wearing it in the summer, I really don't recommend using wool. If you're going to be wearing it...
It's itchy.
Yes. If you're going to be wearing it in winter, you probably don't want to use silk. Unless it's just as a, you know, outer lining. So, you know, consider the fact that you may need to stay cool in said costume or stay warm in said costume. Or if it's spring and fall and it just doesn't matter. If worst comes to worst, ask people who have already made those costumes what they made theirs out of. I mean, worst they'll tell you is, no, I don't feel like telling you my deep, dark cosplay secrets. But most of the time, cosplayers will be okay with telling you what they used. And if you see a costume that you really think is accurate, you know, feel free to message them. Say, hey, I'm looking at making this costume too. How did you do yours? And most of the time, they'll be nice enough to answer.
So I think in order to round out this question, since most of the questions I saw were for Cora or an Attack on Titan kid outfit, I have no idea what they're called. Are they soldiers or the kids? What are they? I think really quickly, it should probably be a good idea for both of us to say what we think would work for both costumes. So for Cora, I think for her shirt, pants, and whatnot, either a cotton or even like a lightweight jersey would probably work fine. And then some type of fur, of course. I mean, it's obvious that she's wearing fur. So animal pelts, fur, then you're good to go.
And leather for the shoes, that sort of
thing.
Yeah,
and leather.
Yeah. I would agree with that. Given that she is from the Southern Water Tribe, I would almost dare to say use wool. Or a suiting, like a bottom weight kind of fabric.
A bottom weight,
a thick woven linen.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to be wearing that costume in the summer, no.
Like most of people do.
Yeah, you use a breathable cotton if you're going to wear it in the summer. If you're going to wear it in the winter, go ahead and use wool. As far as Attack on Titan goes, I really haven't seen that many screenshots of this series, but I have seen a lot of people working on the costume itself. And from what I've seen, most people are either using suede, if they can afford it, for the jacket, mm-hmm. or some sort of cotton linen.
I've seen a couple of people do the leather, and if you can afford the leather, it looks really nice. But yeah, if you can go for the suede, that's not a bad alternative either.
Yes, suede tends to be a little cheaper than leather, unless you're buying an entire hide.
Mm-hmm. In which case, you may as well just spend the money on the leather.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're going to have an entire hide, you may as well use the whole thing. Or alternatively, you know, again, you can always go to consignment stores.
Yeah, that's true.
And find a used leather jacket and upgrade it. You know, just because a piece of clothing is finished doesn't mean that you can't ever alter it or add to it.
Exactly.
Or take away from it.
There's always things that you can do with clothing pieces. I mean, I've taken apart t-shirts to use as, like, patterning fabric. Why not?
I mean, there are people who have entire closet cosplays where it's all clothing that you find in a closet. I mean, it doesn't have to be your closet in your room. It can be like a consignment closet. And you put together a costume, you know? There's nothing wrong with it. All right, this one you may have to cover a bit more of, but it's kind of related to the wig talk we did earlier. How do you paint fur?
And I did this once, with the fur that you gave me. Mine was actually very similar to the way that I did a wig dyeing, but instead of, I did acrylic paint with the rubbing alcohol, and it was just basically to thin out the paint, and then you just dunk the fur in there and pull it out a couple of minutes later. It smells horrible, but when it dries, it's fantastic, and it's still soft. I think that's the big thing, is that if you use fabric paint or any type of acrylic as it is, it makes the fur really, really stiff, and you lose some of that softness that comes with fur.
Now, granted, you can airbrush with acrylics.
You can airbrush, yeah.
And then it will not be stiff, but that's just because it dilutes the acrylic paint to the point where it's literally a mist. Which, there's been some really cool airbrush effects on fur, let me just say.
Oh, yeah. Airbrushing is a lot of fun. When you get an airbrush machine that works, like mine still doesn't. But airbrushing can be a lot of fun. If you're trying to get one solid color, though, and it needs to be a heavy color, you're probably best dyeing it versus doing the airbrushing method. And airbrushes
and also,
are actually pretty cheap.
It's one of those you get what you pay for things.
Yeah, exactly. If you're careful with it, even the cheap ones are actually pretty good.
True, but if you're going to be airbrushing for, you know, some time, I would highly recommend saving up for a good compressor and a good airbrush as opposed to the $20 hobby variety.
Mm-hmm. The hobby variety is good for, like, little miniature figurines or if you're doing, like, cars and stuff like that. If small scale, it's great. But if you're having to do huge pieces, not a good idea.
Right. And the thing to remember about fur is that it is also a synthetic.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the same methods of dyeing wigs apply to dyeing and painting fur. They're both modacrylics. They're both synthetic. So, again, don't use human hair dye on fur. It won't set.
It won't do squat. Okay, next question. And this is definitely a you question because I don't know anything about this. What's the best way to make mech armor? And I love how open-ended all these questions are. It's not any specific or details. It's like, how do you just make the armor?
Okay. Cardboard.
What are your materials? What are you using? What's your budget? What's your timeline? That's how we're rounding up the segment. So,
yeah, you take a bunch of boxes made out of cardboard, punch holes in them, thread them around your arms and legs, write Gundam across the front with Sharpie. It's the best way of doing it.
Best costume ever.
No, for mech armor particularly, you will probably want to consider Pepakura. If you can get your hands around the fact that you need to use modeling programs on your computer, if you are not a very visual person, it will be a lot harder for you. But the easiest way is to use Blender, because so many people out there have already made the armor and have the files available for download on the internet. You could just go to one of these forums and go, I feel like making Halo armor today. Let me download all of the files, and they're there. And then you just import them into Pepakura, and it prints out all the pieces for you. And then it's kind of like in elementary school, where you have all the little pre-cut pieces with the little dotted lines that show you where to fold, and then you have your glue, and you glue them together. Literally, that's how Pepakura works. except that you probably want to not use a glue stick like you did in kindergarten because it will fall apart very quickly on you. And you use cardstock, not paper, because again, you don't want it to fall apart on you. And then once you have assembled your pieces of cardstock into these shapes that they need to be in, that's when the real work starts, and that's when you have to fiberglass over these things and make sure that they're nice and strong for when people inevitably try and come and tackle you at a convention because they think your costume is awesome and it looks like it can take a beating. That's the thing about armor. It always looks really great from the outside, but you can't really tell how structurally stable it is on the inside. And then people come and tackle you, and you find out just how not stable it really was. That's probably the best way of making mech armor in particular. There are other ways to make other armor, but most of those aren't quite as applicable for mech armor in particular, except for EVA foam, which EVA foam are the little mats, camping mats that you can purchase in sporting goods stores, and yoga mats.
Yeah, the camping mats, the yoga mats. Yeah.
They look like big puzzle pieces, and they're usually kind of a grayish color. Sometimes they're multicolor if you really want to get fancy, and they have a textured side and a smooth side. And you basically use those the same way you use fun foam. When you make armor, you use a heat gun to bend it and form it over curves. If you have a bowl, you can kind of, you know, heat it up and push it down over the bowl, and when it cools, it'll kind of sit that way. And you assemble it the same way that you would the Pepakura armor. It's kind of like a sewing pattern where they give you all the steps, and you just kind of, you know, it tells you in what order to assemble these things. Not quite IKEA, though.
No, not quite
to the level of IKEA. IKEA armor would be freaking hilarious.
Maybe we should send that request.
That's a new Matt. That is a new cosplay idea. IKEA armor man. IKEA Iron
armor.
Man.
Yeah.
Yes. You have to have IKEA armor, and you have to name it something ridiculous too.
And it has to have all those U's with the weird little dots on top of it, and the backwards E's and whatnot.
Hence the something ridiculous. Actually, you know, making armor isn't the hard part. The making of the armor is not hard. The planning of the armor is hard. And the attaching of the armor is very hard.
See, that's the problem that I always have, is planning and attachment, which is why I stay away from it. Because for some reason, my brain has no problem processing a 2D outfit and then creating it in three-dimensional. But when it comes to props or any type of armor, it's just like, I'm out. Can't do it.
Well, all you have to do is make sure it stays on your body. And that is the hard part. Making it stay on your body.
Duct tape!
In anime, they don't ever have to worry about these things in anime and fantasy and comics because they never take the armor off.
Well, there's also this thing called gravity and physics.
Yes, well, gravity isn't quite as much of a problem with armor. Physics is definitely a problem with armor. Curves are also a very big problem. Armoring for women is actually harder than armoring for men because of the curves.
Yeah. Which is why we have booby plates.
Although, then again, I was going to say, you could get into the argument with the whole women's fantasy armor, less is more. This is why women wear less armor, because it's harder to make.
That's such a butt to make. I've actually considered trying to make FemShep armor, but having it like realistic armor, so it wouldn't have booby plates, it wouldn't have the weird crotch seams, it would be normal-looking armor. But nobody would get it but me.
We just got an email from our donator.
Oh, cool!
So we should probably, you know, that note, we kind of need to finish and send it.
Oh, crap, I've been so tired.
Yeah.
My brain has been like...
I was going to say something to you about it earlier today. I was like, no, she's really busy.
Yeah, work has been kicking my butt. Badly.
All right.
We'll do that after this episode.
I think this one is more for you because I haven't ever had to do this.
Yeah, I should have brought down my wig and I totally forgot.
How to sew ears or horns or other appendages to a wig.
Other appendages? Like body arm.
Well, I mean, I have this... Homestuck in my head.
Ah, okay.
But yes, attaching things to a wig.
This is what I do, and I've done this once before, and I should have brought my wig down, and I'm a dumb butt for not doing it. I do have pictures on my Facebook page, so I'll insert them into the episode. But basically, what I do is I cut tiny little holes in the wig where I'm going to be attaching the horns or the ears, and then I end up doing is making this makeshift, what is it called? Hairband? I don't, it's not a hairband. What the heck do you call it? What the heck do you call it? Long piece of plastic you shove up into your head, pulls all your hair back. There's a fancy word for it, and I just cannot remember for the life of me. But anyway, I make my own out of craft foam and just using some normal jeweler's wire, sew that into the wig. Then I slide in my horns, sew the horns to that hairband, so that way the horns don't shift around, especially if you have heavy horns. If you just stick them into the wig, they'll just start sliding all over the place. They won't have any center of gravity. So it's good to have some type of hairband in there so they stay put. And then really, that's all there is to it. It's just a time-consuming process. It's just a matter of holes, hairband, sew to the headband, done.
Something else you can do, it's not quite as comfortable unless you can somehow pad it, would be to sew, I don't know, I guess you would call them patches, but small little squares or rounds of a tough substance, so plastic, metal that has been rounded off so you don't hurt yourself, that has been, sanded smooth, or even something like suede or leather, something that just won't tear when you punch holes through it, and sew that plate to the inside of the wig. You'd punch little holes on the outside and then use those to stitch to the wefts, the structure of your wig, and then you'd punch a hole in the center of it as for a screw, and you'd screw it into the horn. Basically, if it makes sense, you're basically putting the structure on the inside of the wig, and then you'd have to have some sort of bolt on the horn, and then you just kind of screw it together. The advantage to that is that they'd be removable. So if you ever needed to wash the wig, but not the horns or the ears, you can just unscrew them. But it's a little more uncomfortable unless you can manage to find a good suede, because at least suede is comfortable. Plastic or metal plates on the inside of your wig,
Not
not very
so much.
comfortable.
Yeah, and
Yeah.
one thing I do also is after I'm done sewing everything into place, I'll either put a layer of cotton or felt over it, so that way if it sits on my head all day, after a while it does start to hurt and does start to sink into my head. So having just that little extra barrier of comfort does help and make sure I don't get a headache. Yeah, now we're making guesses on what the heck I'm thinking of, and I don't even know what the heck it's called. I used to wear them all the time as a kid, so I feel like a dummy.
See, when you say band that pulls back hair, I just think rubber
I know,
band.
I'm like, it's a hair tie, but it's not a hair tie. It's literally, okay, it's this piece of plastic that's curved, and you just kind of stick it on your head and pull it back, and it pulls back all your hair
Oh,
as well.
I know what you're
What
talking
the crap
about.
is it called?
See,
I don't remember.
I always knew those as banana clips.
See, I never knew those as banana clips. I think of banana clips as something different.
Okay.
So
No,
maybe I'm just the
they're
weird
not
one.
toupee clips. I'm seeing guesses in the chat room. They're not toupee clips. We'll
Crap.
probably find out and we'll put it in the show notes.
Google
Anyways,
time!
next. Can you cosplay without color contacts?
Yes.
Yes. We do. I don't want to start a sentence like that, but don't feel obligated to change your eye color when you cosplay. I mean, yes, there is something to be said for accuracy, but to be honest, it's really not that big of a deal unless you're doing a close-up portrait photo shoot of your character. Otherwise, most people really won't notice as much. They'll notice your eyebrows. Definitely, they'll notice if you don't color your eyebrows and your hair is a wacky color. But the eyes, they won't notice as much unless there is a drastically different color between you and your character. And even then, you know, some people can't do it for health reasons. Like, I can't wear contacts because of my astigmatism.
Yeah, same here.
So, you know, I cosplay characters that have silver eyes. I'd love to wear contacts. I can't do it. For health reasons, I just cannot do it, and I'm not willing to risk the health of my eyes for the sake of cosplay. So I just, you know, color my eyebrows and let it go.
Yeah, the way I look at it is like there's only so much that we can do with our body. We can paint our skin, we can change our hair color, we can do all these crazy things, but your eyes are the one thing that are a constant. And as far as I'm concerned, I only have these two. They cannot be replaced. So I'm not going to chance it and put in contacts and make my eyesight even worse. I'd rather go around a con being able to see.
I mean, I'll take off my glasses when I cosplay, especially for
Absolutely.
photos. But you really kind of want to think about safety first. And the other thing about contacts, especially for cosplay reasons, is that one, you need to see an optometrist. You need to get your eyes measured for contacts. You can't just buy generic contacts. So go see your optometrist, tell them what you are looking for, that you want costume contacts, and, you know, have a chat with them about safety, because the other part of it is that you need to be careful where you buy them from. And the reason for that is because you do not want to buy used contacts anywhere, no matter what the circumstances, because you cannot tell where they have been. And frankly, you probably don't want to be putting things that you don't know where they've been in your eyes. And there have been a lot of horror stories going around the cosplay community of people who have bought from sellers at conventions and overseas where the contacts were not new. And you can actually get disease from those. So
Gross.
just, you know, investigate the company that is selling them to you, make sure they are legit. Read the reviews, you know, talk to other people who have done business with them, do your due diligence and your due care. You know, it doesn't have to be a scary experience as long as you take responsibility.
Maybe take the precautions for it. And the other good thing about the optometrist is that they can actually show you the proper way of putting a contact in your eye, making sure that everything's safe and all that good fun stuff. A lot of people I know try it for the first time, but they don't know how to put it in, so they end up making it worse than it really is. And we're not trying to say these things to scare people, just to kind of be prepared for it. And I know a lot of people with eye problems who have no trouble with the contacts. They're cool, they're fine. I just know with my eye issues, not just the astigmatism, but I actually found that the cornea of my eye and the way my eye is shaped is actually difficult to accept contacts well. So I just can't do contacts, unfortunately. And there are those who think that you have to have contacts. That's fine. That's your deal. That's what you think. But don't impose that onto other people. I think
Right.
that's the big thing here. If you want to
And
wear the contacts, cool.
we would also suggest to cosplayers that you not judge other people for not wearing contacts. You know, glass houses and stones and all that. Speaking of coloring eyebrows, we're going to jump ahead one since it's related.
This is related, sort of.
How do you color your eyebrows?
Your
Well,
method's different
there
from
are.
mine.
Well, there are basically three ways of doing it in a very general sort of sense. The first way is to simply color your eyebrows naturally. No primer, no base, no nothing put on them. You just directly put color onto your eyebrows. The most popular way of doing that is using liquid mascara or liquid eyeliner. You can get them in colors, and you literally just brush it into your eyebrows. The second way is to use some sort of concealer or foundation to prime your eyebrows, to basically make it so something will stick to them, because if you try and just brush things into them, it doesn't stick very well. Just that's the nature of eyebrows. So you would coat them first with some sort of makeup. I understand you can also use theatrical makeup to cover your eyebrows, but basically you want to cover them so that things will stick to them and so that they're less visible, especially if you're like me and have very, very, very dark hair. And then you put the color on top of them as well. If you prime first with concealer or foundation, you have more options as to what you can use to color them. You can use colored pencils, as in eye pencils. You can even use lip pencils if you're looking for reds and browns. You can use the liquid mascara. You can use poster paint, which, yes, that is the stuff that kids use in elementary school. It has its use. You can use acrylic paints. I do not recommend using oil paints, as it is incredibly difficult to get out. So don't use testers enamels on your eyebrows, no matter how cool it looks. And you can actually use some theatrical paints. You can also use eyeshadow, incidentally. You can brush eyeshadow on
That's
your eyebrows if you prime it first.
Because there's so many and different then the third colors way, of eyeshadow out there, it is redonkulous. It is so much easier with eyeshadow.
That's the easiest way to get custom colors.
Absolutely.
So if you have a random party color, eyeshadow is the way to go. Just get a good quality eyeshadow so you get that good solid color. And the third way, which is actually the most popular way of doing it, and I can't understand for the life of me why, is the glue stick method.
Everybody does that.
And that's
oh
when
my
you,
God.
You literally take a kid's glue stick and you put it over your eyebrow to slick the hair down and to make it, you know, stay in place and to, you know, prime to give your color a foundation to stick to. You let it dry and then you put your color on over it and you basically get the same methods as the makeup foundation way. The thing I don't like about the glue, which incidentally, you need to make sure that one, it's non-toxic because you really don't want to stick toxic things in your eyes. And two, that it's water soluble. Because otherwise, it's really hard and painful to get the stuff out and you end up pulling your eyebrow hairs out.
See,
which is why I could never understand the glue stick method.
Yeah.
Well, it gets stiff too. And that's the thing. Yes, it makes your eyebrows stay in place, but it also makes for really stiff-looking hair.
It really depends on the glue. The ones that people always tell me that they use is they'll get the Elmer's glue because that seems to be one of the most common, but they get the water-soluble.
Right.
They also get the one that's the blue gel-tipped. That one apparently is the best, and it washes out of your eyebrows really easily with almost no pulling.
Elmer's also has the blue-tipped one.
Yeah. A lot of people do body paint on their face.
I mean, you can, incidentally, yeah. You can also combine the methods. So if you want to use the glue stick first and then put makeup foundation on over it to conceal it better, you can. That is probably the best way, incidentally, if you need to redraw your eyebrows. So if you have, say, a crossplay that is going from male to female, and you need to reduce the thickness of your eyebrows because, you know, women have thinner eyebrows than men and you don't want to shave them, then you would slick them down and use some sort of concealer or foundation to completely blank out your eyebrows so that you cannot see them, assuming you don't want to shave them off. And then you would use eye pencils and redraw your brow lines over it. Or, you know, you can use a paintbrush and paint it on if you're using paints. So, you know, basically you have to conceal your eyebrows in the first place, you know, prime them, and then add color. And it's a good idea, as a suggestion, to carry a small travel-sized bottle of makeup remover with you when you go to cons so that you can more easily remove it. And I'm sure that hotels really don't appreciate having multicolored washcloths and hand towels every morning when cosplayers
finish. I'm sure we're not the worst offenders.
Oh, no, I know that we're not. I know that we're not. But it can make the job a lot easier on you if you have a little bottle of the makeup remover and just a couple of little, like, moist towelettes just to, you know, clean the stuff off.
Yeah.
Or at least get most of the stuff off before you use the hotel washcloths.
They would appreciate it.
It's gonna happen anyway.
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
You're gonna have multicolored stuff. We know. Just, it helps. And it's a lot less painful for you, and it also comes off quicker. Because it can still take you time to get that stuff out of your eyebrows. It takes me forever to get it out of my eyebrows, let me tell you. Because I have very thick, bristly, dark eyebrows, so I have to put a lot of makeup over them. Incidentally, I use the paint method myself. I use acrylics, and I use Delta Ceram Coat, because it's very, very thick paint. And yes, it costs a little more than Apple Barrel and Folk Art, but you only need one coat.
Yeah.
Which is nice, especially for people with dark hair like me. Because the less layers you have to do, the easier it is. We should probably briefly address order. Some people will do their makeup before they put on their wig and costume.
Oh,
yeah.
Some
people will do the makeup afterward. The big question that you need to think about is, do you have to wait for it to dry? If you have to wait for it to dry, you probably want to put on your costume first,
mm-hmm.
so that you don't mistakenly put it on before it's dried and get it all over your costume. Same thing with the wig, incidentally. If you don't have to worry about it drying, then you can do it in any order you want. But you do want to consider that this stuff, most of the methods require using wet materials, you know, liquid mascara, paint, that sort of thing. Eyeshadow, it's a little easier because it's a powder. It doesn't have to dry.
Yeah. The only exception is there's this brand from Maybelline called Tattoo that I've been using a lot more recently. It's not quite a liquid, but it's almost like a cake version. A moist cake. There we go. So that one does require a couple of seconds extra to let it dry and sit on your eyelashes and eyebrows. So
mm-hmm.
That's awesome stuff. I love it.
But, you know, I have made the mistake and gotten foundation on one of my white wigs before.
Oh, whoops.
It was one of the worst mistakes I made because I could not get it out of the wig. The foundation is actually still in the wig because I cannot
oops.
Get it out.
You have my
and
sympathy.
It's on the front. It's in the bangs. It's very visible. I was like, oh.
Been there. Makes me grateful for my darker color wigs.
Thank you for making the same mistake. And speaking of makeup, body paint, since this is all you, I refuse to do body paint.
It's so fun!
I'm sure it is fun, but one of the big things about body paint, which I do know from having not worn it, is that you cannot touch your face or your skin when you are wearing it. I mean, yes, you can set it. I mean, you can set your makeup so that, you know, you can touch it and nothing happens to it. But as a general rule, once it's on there, that's it. If you, you know, start touching it, you tend to have to need touch-ups later. And I'm very prone to touching my face and my head a lot. So that's kind of strike number one for me on not using body paint.
Amber's a touchy-feely person.
I am a very touchy-feely person. But two, I don't like things sitting on my skin. I mean, body paint ends up being something like a second layer of skin in a way. Mm. Colored skin, granted, but second layer of skin. And I'm just not somebody who can deal well with that, you know? It's just one of those things that just kind of gives me the skeevies. Yes, that is my own word. That is my own word.
She went with skeevies.
But that said, if you do not have the problems that Amber has, here are some tips on wearing body paint and what kind to use.
Oh, there we go. Good transition. See, again, this is another one of those ambiguous questions because there are a ton of different types available, and it depends on where you're going, how much you plan to use, how long you plan to wear it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The main thing is that there are two different types. There's a water-based paint, and then there's the alcohol-based paint. Water-based paint basically means that if you sweat or if you get really, really hot, it'll come off because it's waterproofed. Whee! Droplets of water. Thank you, Amber. I appreciate that.
I feel so bad for our audio listeners that don't get the full experience of watching the gest. For those who can't, you know, watch the video, we're sitting here making rain falling kind of gestures with our fingertips from the top to the bottom of the screen.
We are so goofy. And then we have the alcohol-based paint, which basically sticks to your skin, and as soon as it's on, it ain't budging. It is fantastic, but oh my goodness, it dries you out like nobody's business. So If you are only going to be painting your face or just a few areas along your neck, I would recommend water-based paints. And personally, I use this one called Paradise. Let me see if I can get it away from the light. There we go.
I was going to say, lens flare!
Lens flare from my craft lamp by Mehron. And the thing I like about this is that it's a cake-based makeup that's water-activated, so you basically put your brush into it with water and then paint it on your face. For me, this has been the best because I have dry and oily skin, and I am prone to breakouts. I have, like, the worst skin known to man. So for me, the water base for Paradise is fantastic because it stays on all day, and I don't have to worry about it. But there are other ones such as liquid makeup, and you can get these. This is a Mehron. But Ben Nye makes them. Snazaru makes them. There's so many different kinds available, but this is the liquid base form. The pros of this is that it's easy to put on. The cons of this is that it doesn't last for very long. If you have dry skin, this works out really, really well because it tends to stick to you a little bit better. Whereas if you're like me and you have oily skin, it tends to start running after about 2 hours. Then the other kind, this is Prozade. Prozade is a medical-grade adhesive. When it sticks on you, it will be stuck forever. Or at least until you wash it off after about 40 or 50 washes. You
think
need
super
to have...
glue.
Huh?
I said, think super glue.
Yeah, it's super glue. And basically what you do is you take a small portion of this and you mix it with acrylic paint, and then you paint it on your body or you use spray paint or whatever. This is great for situations where you're doing full body paint. Like, you need to do your legs, you need to do your arms, you need to do your hands. It stays on all day, and it almost never cracks. That's the beauty of this stuff. So you can actually sit and touch things and eat and be normal. The thing about this is that because it sticks so well, you need alcohol to actually take it off your skin. One shower wash is not going to do it. And there is a Prozade remover that you can use. It's like, oh goodness, I want to say it's somewhere between 60 to 70 proof that I have with me. It basically just takes a couple squirts, let it sit on the paint for a good 2 to 3 minutes, and then you wash it off, and it'll take off most of it. Yeah, that one I'm not a big fan of, but it's fantastic for painting latex masks, let me tell you. If you're on the cheap side, because I've done this before, here's the Party City brand. Honestly, I don't have a problem with the Party City brand. If you're only going to be wearing it for like 2 to 3 hours, the cream-based makeup actually works really well for dry, oily skin. If you're not looking for anything fancy, I mean, I know these people in these pictures look really made up. If you take your time and you get the right paintbrushes and you get the right tools, this actually works really well. So don't knock the Party City stuff. And as always, the last thing I tell everybody, because this is something that we're getting on a lot of the Homestuck kids about, barrier spray. This is a must. This helps seal in your paint and prevents it from rubbing off all over the place. If you're using a water-based paint, it will eventually start rubbing off, but this lessens the chance that it'll happen. If you forget your barrier spray, if you're on a budget, hairspray. Hairspray does miracles. Just don't get it in your eyes. It stings. And there you go. There's my little spiel. Without details, it's hard to really embellish on stuff.
Incidentally, if you want to know more about body paint and makeup, we filmed a panel at Alcon about makeup and body paint from a very good presenter, and you can actually find that video on our YouTube channel, along with all of our other panel videos, of course, and we will be getting more of those shortly. I also wanted to mention that if you do happen to be in full body paint, kindly do not use facilities like the hotel pool, the hotel hot tub, the hotel jacuzzis. Please do not use those while you are in full body paint. Even the strongest barrier spray will eventually give way.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, if you get body paint in the pool or in the jacuzzi or, you know, in the exercise Olympic swimming pool, they have to drain the entire pool to clean it because it is a health regulation. And that really ticks off the hotel. Which I don't blame them if you have to empty out, you know, a pool of that size over body paint. So just as a courtesy, you can do poolside photo shoots. Just don't get in the pool until you take the paint off.
I say, if it
So.
helps any, and this is actually listed on, I know this is listed on my Mehron stuff, it's listed on my Ben Nye stuff too. The reds and the yellows on most of these, and the blue for the Party City brands, will actually stain your skin, and they strongly recommend that you don't put it anywhere near your eye. Like, they don't even want you to put it on your eyelid, because it can actually hurt you. So this stuff can stain your skin, it can stain clothes, it can do all of the above. So just be safe and be careful, and don't go crazy with it. Be sensible with your body.
As with any makeup product or anything that you put on the skin, it's probably best if you try a little bit first in an unobtrusive spot, you know, like on the back of your hand, just put a little bit on your skin. One, to see how you react to it, make sure you're not allergic to it, because mm-hmm. some people don't find out they're allergic to it
until
somebody sprayed it all over their body.
Yeah.
And two, to see how well it blends with your skin, because of course, we're all different. Yay, we're all special snowflakes. And we all have different complexions and skin tones, and the makeup will work better for some people than others. And the only way to know it is try it.
Right. A good example of this is with any of the white makeups, and white is notorious for this. White, you always need at least 4 or 5 coats, versus like a blue or a red where you may need 1 or 2. And it's just because this streaks, this shows every little nook and cranny. Even on my pale butt skin, I have to use 4 or 5 coats of this stuff just to get white.
Pale butt skin?
I wanted to say the A word, but I'm trying to be PC. I'll say it in the after session.
Audio listeners, I facepalmed.
But even as a general rule, you should always try out your costumes before you go to convention to, you know, test it and make sure things are working, seams don't split. You do the same thing if you're doing any type of face paint or body paint. See how long it takes you to put it on, see how comfortable you're in it, what kind of makeup techniques you can learn. You may not even realize that you can use eyeshadow to do interesting contouring with your face and shading around your body. So, I mean, test it home first so you can see how it works.
It's especially important if you're going to use it for a stage cosplay.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely know how long it's going to take you to put that stuff on and know how you're going to react to it before. Like, don't make your stage cosplay your debut.
No. Test it. Test, test, test.
It sounds like we're testing our microphones.
Testing 1, 2, 3.
At any rate, let us end on a wonderful note that makes me want to cry. In a good way.
We haven't finished our segment yet. We still have to do our tips. Scroll down the bottom of the list.
Well, I figure we're already at an hour. We can go after session.
Oh, you want to after session it? Okay, that's fine. Well, poo.
I don't want to talk people to death.
That's what we do anyway. We've got 47 episodes of this.
Fair enough. I suppose we can give tips on how to Google.
It's very important when it comes to these questions. Don't laugh at me.
I just type in words, and Google tells me what I want to know.
You know how it is. I mean, you visit some of these forums,
I know.
You see these Facebook pages, and people ask these generic questions, and it's like, did you not spend the 5 seconds to go to Google and look it up?
Most of the time when you post on forums, the first thing they're going to ask you is, did you search the forum to see if your question's already been asked?
Exactly.
So that is the first recommendation I would make, is before you ask your question, make
sure
nobody else has asked it first.
Please,
because a lot of these generic questions, like how to make armor, somebody has already asked them, and cosplayers have been asking that question for decades, like since Hollywood movies started being made. And I don't say that to be facetious. I say that to, one, save you the response you're going to get from the mods of that forum, which I promise you will be snarky and tongue-in-cheek. And two, because you're not going to get the answer you want. And the reason you won't get the answer you want is because you're not being specific enough.
That's the big key right there.
People can give you all the general tips in the world about how to do something, and it's probably not going to address your particular problem. So you need to, one, be very specific about what you're trying to address. Give the name of the series. Give the name of the character. Give screenshots if you have them, or reference shots. And explain exactly what it is you're trying to do if you have any sort of budget or restriction on materials. That will really help people just kind of zero in to give you a more accurate answer on what you're looking for. And it will save you the trouble of having the mods tongue lash you.
It's the same thing when it comes to, like, well, how do I dye such and such fabric? The more details you can give about the fabric, the better. Like, what color is it? What type of material is it? What's the cotton versus, you know, synthetic blend? I mean, the more detailed, the better the responses are going to be. That's a big pet peeve of mine.
Also, consider looking in multiple parts of forums. Just because you don't find what you need in one section of the forum doesn't mean that your answer is not in another section of the forum. Some forums will have general sections that are kind of a catch-all for everything. Some will have forums dedicated to things like props and armor, for fabric crafting, for tutorials, or for general advice. So if the search function doesn't necessarily yield what you need, try poking around in the forums just a little bit to see if you can find a matching sort of section.
Mm-hmm.
So if I go to look up, say, and a tutorial on attaching armor, then I would probably first look in the tutorials section, if they have one. If I fail to find what I need there, I would look in the armoring and prop section. If I don't see what I need in there, I would probably move on to the general construction section.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just kind of move your way from the more specific to the more general until you can, you know, find a few things of what you need. I mean, this is forum-based. This isn't even search engine-based, which is even harder, actually. Which, if you want to use a search engine to find things, reference shots are very easy to find because a lot of search engines have image filters where you can just look up images of a thing. If you want general images, you probably want to type in the name of your series, the name of your character,
mm-hmm.
hopefully correctly spelled, and then something general like cosplay, costume, screenshot, photo, picture. You want to use general terms because you'll get the most results that way. The more specific you are, it's harder to find what you need, but the results will be more accurate, which is kind of a backwards way of going about it, I guess. But it's faster if you use more general search terms than if you go really, really specific, like blank character from blank series, blank armor. Like, if
the
they have a particular armor set.
That works is if it's a really popular costume, like if you do Cloud Strife from Final Fantasy VII, or if you do any of the Sailor Scouts, it has to be something that's really, really well known, because there are a butt ton of tutorials and then some available.
Or the costume has to have been done several times over.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if a bunch of other people have done that costume, you can probably just Google your character's name, as long as it's not a generic Japanese name, and costume. And you will find images. Now, it's a little harder if you want to find tutorials. Because, I mean, yeah, you can just Google series name, character name, tutorial. Or costume tutorial, or cosplay tutorial, something to that effect. But that will, one, bring up literally hundreds of thousands of results. And two, it takes a long time to go through all those results. So.
Yeah,
so realistically, what you want to do is use the power of filters. So if you want to look for tutorials on, say, DeviantArt's site, on most search engines, you can type in site:deviantart.com, and it will restrict your search to that website, which will make it faster, and it will give you more targeted results. You can do the same thing for cosplay.com, for AC Paradise, for any major costume or tutorial site. So that's one thing you can do. If you want more recent results, say from the last year, especially if your character is new, like say from Attack on Titan, you may want to use the filter to restrict your results to the last year so that you don't get all these random extraneous things from like 5 years ago.
Google is an awesome, awesome tool.
Yes,
it will.
It is. So you can do that. I mean, aside from the image filters, which have their own complete set of things, you can actually tell it, I only want large images, which I actually do a lot because I want my reference shots to be large enough that I can see them on my computer screen. I do not want avatars. You know, I don't want Facebook profile icons. I can't use those as reference shots. So I always tell my search engine, I only want images larger than X so that I can only see like high resolution size pictures that I can actually use to make my cosplay.
You only want the good pics, sorry.
Well, I mean, they can be crappy pics. They just have to be high res because otherwise I need a magnifying glass to see the details. And I'm getting old, you know. My eyes are getting worse every year, and frankly, a magnifying glass is kind of demoralizing.
You just need to cosplay more obscure characters like me because I'm lucky if I get more than a little pixel or an avatar. Quite literally, with my last Final Fantasy I, it was a pixel avatar. That's all I had. And go.
Incidentally, you can also use Google to find large databases on your character. Look up wikis on your series. I mean, Sailor Moon has its own wiki. Saint Seiya has its own wiki. Final Fantasy has its own wiki.
Everybody has a wiki.
And they have a ton of information in there about characters, personalities, because, you know, cosplay isn't necessarily just about the clothing. It's also about the character, you know, becoming the character. So that can be interesting to research. I mean, you can look up things on Wikipedia. You can look up things on professional costumer sites. A lot of professional costumers are now hosting tutorials on their own websites. I mean, God Save the Queen has them. I think Vulpin had some of them at one point. A lot of professional cosplayers are now putting tutorials on their Facebook. In fact, there is a Facebook group dedicated to cosplay tutorials. Isn't that fantastic? I believe it's actually called Cosplay
You got it.
And it's a good place to start if you have no other clue of where to go. So I recommend doing that. It's like, I had something on the tip of my tongue that I was going to say about
Uh-oh.
searching, and now I can't remember it.
It'll come to you. And my other thing is that when you get to the point where searching only goes so far, you can't find certain things, or you're at the point where it's like, okay, I have no idea how to do this, and Google and Yahoo and Bing and all that, they're not helping me. When you come to the point of asking a question, be as specific as possible, be as detailed as possible. Don't just message a random cosplayer and say, hey, how'd you make this? Because that's not enough. And sometimes the cosplayers are like, well, here's 100 steps. I can't really tell you all that. I don't have the time to tell you all that. So narrow down what the heck you're talking about. So be specific and be courteous to the cosplayer. Don't make them feel like that they're forced to give you a response because some people feel like, you know, it's a trade secret they don't want to tell you and they have a right to not tell you. That's their prerogative. That's fine. But don't try to sit there and be like, well, how'd you make this? And then how'd you make this? That's my other big thing is when somebody emails you or messages you constantly asking every other week, you know, hey, how'd you make this piece? Hey, how'd you make this piece? Hey, how'd you make this piece? No, sorry, go Google. I put him to Google. Have fun with that kid. So it be as descriptive and detailed as possible with your questions, and try not to bug the crap out of them. Those are my two good pieces of advice, because I've been through both, and they're highly annoying.
Costumers are people too.
Ooh, Allie brought up a good one. Carefully use fan art for reference pictures. The artist could change details for artistic reasons.
And actually, some artists may not appreciate you turning their art into a costume. As flattering as that might sound to you as a cosplayer, that actually does invoke copyright issues. So make sure that if you do use fan art, ask permission first. I mean, worst they'll
Always
tell you
good to
is
ask.
no, but
Yeah.
yeah, it's always good to ask first, especially if it's of a really popular series.
We're all one giant copyright infringement anyway, so
So I believe that That covers our searching tips, now that we've
I think
kind
so
of
too.
bashed Google.
Okay, Google.
All right. Sorry to keep you waiting for this really happy note. The person who gave us the very generous donation is Watcher Allen, which I will not use his last name just for privacy reasons. That's kind of, we have a policy against that. I will just read this aloud. I'm a little surprised that the donation is such a standout. I know you don't make a big plea for money, but I've learned a lot from your podcast and the tutorials, and it was only procrastination that kept me from donating earlier. I'd be happy to challenge others to donate. Your podcast is more than worth it. I'm a relatively new cosplayer, only 2 costumes to date. That's okay. We welcome costumers of all kinds, even prospective costumers. If you haven't made one yet, that's okay. We would still love you to watch our show and learn. And your tutorials have motivated me to try some new things. For instance, this last weekend, I made a duct tape body double based on your previous post.
Oh, awesome.
I'm glad I could be of assistance. My closet still smells like duct tape, incidentally, because that's where my duct tape dummy is right now. My whole closet just smells like duct tape. It's what finally made me pull the trigger and make the donation. I'm impressed with both of your abilities as costume makers and as hosts. I can see you both developing careers, or at least paying avocations in this field.
Aww.
And with that statement, I think I've admitted to being quite a bit older. You're both just kids to me. Take care, Alan.
Kids?
We're cosplay elders in the scheme of things.
We are so old in comparison.
Which,
now
you know, in the timeline of life, yes, we are young.
Very.
In the timeline of cosplay,
you're old.
We are ancient. I mean, we go to things like Comic-Con and A-Con and Anime Matsuri, and we literally see parents bringing their newborn kids in costume. Like, they're starting them out in the cradle, which is awesome.
It's awesome.
I have no complaints. Thank you. It makes us feel old to see all these whippersnappers that are like 14, 15, half our age.
She even said whippersnapper.
Going around in these costumes. I have to take the metaphor to its logical conclusion. You know, I was going to finish with get off my lawn, but I hadn't gotten there yet.
We worked to that point.
I mean, I say this all very tongue-in-cheek because I'm also the youngest in my department. So, you know, I can kind of put on the whole I'm ancient thing and not really mean it.
Yeah, I'm that way.
But yes, in the cosplay scheme of things, we are old. Just not in the whole, you know, scheme of even fans, like just being fans of something, we're not old.
Mm-hmm.
But costuming, we are. Except Rennies. In Rennie terms, we are young.
As I say, if we go to comic book conventions, sci-fi conventions, and Renfest, we're typically pretty young there.
We're kind of in the middle.
Yeah.
In the middle there. We're young for Rennies.
Yeah.
Because there aren't very many people at like 14 and 15 who do Renaissance festivals.
Ooh.
But for everything else, yeah, we're kind of middle to middling.
Mm-hmm. Especially the anime conventions. Oh, good gravy.
But,
we're ancient.
We do give huge thanks to Alan. In fact, we were in the middle of writing your thank you letter earlier that we will still send, incidentally.
We're still sending
we'll
one,
still
we
send that. We tend to, since there are two of us, we kind of have to trade communications back and forth to make sure it's agreeable to both parties and that it sounds nice before we actually send out anything.
That sounds horrible. It's mostly because we both send an answer at the same time, so you get 2 different responses.
Yes.
That's nice.
I was actually about to say that, is that generally, you will get an answer from both of us individually, which kind of creeps some people out, just because they get 2 different emails from the same email address from 2 different people. But sometimes we try and send them as a joint email, and so that just takes a little longer because we both have to agree to what we're saying. We may both be quirky hosts, but we kind of tend to think a little differently. Val tends to be a little nicer about writing business-like things, and I suck at it. I shoot from the hip sometimes, and
it's called 12 years
I'm very blunt, and sometimes I really lack diplomacy. My charisma score is down here. My int is up here. My stats are a little unbalanced, I think.
I should tell you about the sarcastic letter I sent at work today. It was fantastic.
We're being called old bags.
No, Old Bag is a character from the Ace Attorney series that Allie cosplays. Okay. Allie's a freaking genius at Old Bag.
Okay. I was like, okay, yeah, I could see that.
Hey, you know, I go to school, and I mean, I'm not even 30 yet, and there are kids that I teach who are like, what's a VCR? And I'm like, come on, it's not that old. That's just wrong. Eventually we're going to get to the point they're going to be like, what's a DVD? Go home. But, go back to your diapers.
But for our listeners, speaking of donations, if you would like to donate to our show, we will happily accept donations to the show. We don't solicit for them, incidentally. We will accept them if you send them, but we're not going to openly go, we need donations now, as a general rule, just because we don't need them. The show is free. It will always be free. We will not run ads, so we don't have to worry about that. But we do still have costs associated with the show, including the website. You know, we have to pay for our domain so that nobody squats on cospod.org and tries to charge us $1,500 for it, like some squatters. There is a company squatting on cospod.com right now.
Yeah.
For $1,500.
So wrong.
So we have to try and hang on to cospod.org, especially given as popular as we're getting. Just kind of it's astonishing and humbling, really, to know like just how popular we're getting. And it's like,
I told you. You didn't believe me.
I still don't believe you.
I know you still don't.
But any donations that we do receive go directly to show costs. They don't reimburse us for anything.
Yeah.
They literally go directly into the show.
And nothing else.
Yes, you can be very well assured that your donations are going for a good cause, which is the show you are listening to right now. So, commercial over for that. Also, if you don't donate to the show, but you still would like to donate money, we are approaching the holiday seasons very quickly. And it is that time of year to consider charity donations, especially if you are of the mindset of, you know, giving and generosity. And especially given our current economic standards, there's a lot of places that could really use your help. And I'm speaking of things like food banks, like children's hospitals, you know, charities for veterans, that sort of thing. So if you are so inclined, we really encourage you to reach out and donate to local charities that help groups like that. I know both of us really espouse the charity Child's Play, which does a lot of work donating games to hospitalized children. And, of course, they do a big fundraiser every year for Child's Play.
First weekend and so we're of November, both big fans and a lot of that. People are already doing it.
Yeah, we're both big fans of theirs, as well as Children's Medical Network. And they also do good work. If you can't donate money, please consider donating your time, because a lot of these places can always use volunteer work, especially veterans associations and food banks. A lot of food banks, I actually heard on NPR this afternoon, a lot of food banks are really hurting right now.
I bet they are.
So, you know, if you can donate food to the food banks, please do. Donate time to work in the warehouses and soup kitchens. We're going to be putting together a cosplayers charity project this winter. We're still kind of getting the details on that worked out, actually. And we will bring that to you as soon as we've got everything set so that people can participate if they choose to. And also, speaking of changes, on a slightly lighter note, our website is going to have a big change coming up fairly shortly. And it's going to involve costumers, and a marketplace. And that is as much as I'm going to say on that. But if you hear from us in the next couple of weeks, it's not a joke. It's not a prank. We genuinely want feedback when we ask you about this thing. So just putting that out there.
And she makes a face. Wait, I gotta tilt it up even more. No.
Well, see, I can tilt it all the way up, but quite frankly, I really suck at being evil. I don't have an evil bone in my body.
I don't either, but it's so fun. Oh my god, it's fun being evil.
Speaking of evil, Ragweed. Evil can go jump off a cliff. Can go to hell and die. Unless, of course, I'm going to hell, which I've been told many times in my life, and if I'm going to hell, there better not be Ragweed down there.
Oh, you know it'll be down there. It'll be with the party with everybody else.
So, I'm going to end the episode on that note. Ragweed can just go die.
Happy cosplay, people! Go die, Ragweed.
Happy cosplaying. Don't have allergies.